be blue like the morning throng of downtown professionals. Did you know that in the 17th century, a woman named Anne Hibbins was executed in the Boston Common on charges of witchcraft? Sailor asked as she pushed the stroller with Xander. They hanged her for all to see. Christ, Sailor! Ashling did a sign of the cross, side-eyeing our friend. What a fun fact to start the day with! Percy laughed. A stab of melancholy pierced through me. Devon would have appreciated that jab. But I couldn't just text him willy-nilly. We weren't supposed to talk about non-baby-related stuff. My rule, which I stood behind. It just sucked. Anyway, Persephone exclaimed, as much as I'd love to hear about women being hung for witchcraft, Belle has something to tell us. Thanks for the subtle transition, sis. Since I was the only one who didn't have a stroller to push, I held Rooney, Sailor's toddler daughter, on one of those leashes while she tried chasing pigeons off the paved walkway. She looked like a tiny drunk man trying to pick a fight. I was here for it. It's still early, but I wanted to let you know that there's a bun in this oven. I pointed at my stomach. The girls stopped pushing their strollers and jumped on me with hugs and squeals of delight. Rooney and Aster, who had no idea what was going on but sensed the excitement, pushed between our legs and hugged me too, squealing.
Auntie Belle, Auntie Belle!
I gathered everyone into my arms and laughed, a little embarrassed. I was going to tell my parents on the phone later this evening. They weren't going to be super happy about my having a child out of wedlock, but I knew they'd come to expect nothing better from me. They knew I wasn't the marrying kind. They had no illusions about me following in my younger sister's footsteps. Did you and Devon basically lock yourselves in the bedroom for an entire month? That was fast. Sailor reached back for her stroller, mirth still dancing in her green eyes. Not sure I want to have this conversation when the average age of this group is about 2.5. I waved a hand toward the strollers and kids. The kids have no idea what we're talking about, Ashling said primly. To be honest, mine is still colorblind, he's so young. There's Rooney and Aster, Percy reminded her with a smile. Let's save it for our weekly takeout night. In which Belle won't be drinking any wine, Sailor beamed triumphantly. More for us. She won't be going clubbing anytime soon either. Percy seemed particularly happy by that turn of events. Which means no one can slip anything into her drink. Not that it ever happened, but my sister was a worrier. Anyway, I hope you know we're here for you. Whatever you need, just say the word. Although, I think Devon wants to play a huge part in the pregnancy. Persephone tilted her chin downward, inspecting me. Devon can screw right off. He knew the score. Wait, I said as we resumed our walk. How do you know that? Devon couldn't help himself. He called Killian last night to break the good news. Percy's face almost splits from her huge grin. Killian told me. I made a mental note to maim Devon with the pregnancy test for his lack of discretion. That's total bull. Isn't there some lawyer code or whatever? I complained, even though it didn't feel half bad knowing Devon was informing the Western world he was going to be a great dad. Especially after his frigid reaction when I told him I was knocked up. He's not your lawyer, dum-dum, Sailor pretended to knock on my temple. Although, I'm pretty sure he'll have to be at some point with the shenanigans you get yourself into. Besides, he probably told Killian not to tell, and Killian just couldn't help himself. My brother would give away national secrets and the state of Texas without blinking to meet his wife's approval. Ashling swung her gaze at Persephone with a smile. Percy's cheeks colored. She ducked her head. Ashling had a point. Killian was defenseless against his wife. Hunter and Sam weren't too good about saying no to their respective wives either. I shook my head. It doesn't matter. I'm just glad it didn't take a bunch of time. I mean, the real risk is to keep the pregnancy. Getting pregnant was the easy part, but still. Guys, I don't mean to be a party pooper, but
Is it just me, or is there a dude with a black coat following us? Sailor raised an eyebrow.
Where?
Aisling looked left and right, confused.
3 o'clock.
Aisling and Persephone immediately froze, subtly trying to sneak a few glances. I had less finesse than that. I turned my head sharply, narrowing my eyes at a man who was tucked behind a tree a few dozen feet from us. He was tall and broad. He wore a hat and was clad in all black from head to toe, so I couldn't see what he looked like.
Is this something you should tell Sam about?
Percy asked Aisling. Aisling frowned, her eyebrows drawing together.
I don't think so. He has no open beefs with anyone right now. Ever since he dismantled the Russians, things have been quiet. Maybe even too quiet for his taste. If he thought I was in any kind of danger, he wouldn't let me out the door without at least two of his soldiers.
It was true. Sam would recruit an entire army to keep Aisling safe. If she didn't have bodyguards, that meant Sam was having a peaceful year.
What about you? Sailor spun to Persephone.
Even though my sister's husband was clean as a whistle in his business, there was no denying kidnapping his family was a lucrative idea.
Percy shook her head.
The Fitzpatrick clan works with a security company. All former Secret Service agents. We always know what level of threat we're facing for every scenario, including kidnapping. Right now it's low because Royal Pipeline's stock is tanking on Wall Street.
Poor you, I purred.
However will you pay your next month's mortgage?
All eyes drifted toward me. I looked over my shoulder again. The man was gone now, but I bet he just found another tree to hide behind.
What? I huffed. Who could be going after me?
There was one person I could think of, actually, but they were very dead.
Maybe one of the nutcases who writes you letters? Sailor suggested. You're one of the most notorious women in Boston, Belle.
No freaking way. Those guys can barely operate a landline, let alone plot a well-executed murder. But I tugged red-headed Rooney closer to me, just in case. I bet it's just a creep who's going to rub one off after we're gone.
Mommy was to rub one off,
Rooney clucked at Sailor, who shot me an, "Are you happy now?" look. My expression told her,
"Yes, very."
Well, I can see him again now, and he's looking at you, Belle.
Persephone's voice was a sharp blade rolling against my skin. The small hairs on the back of my neck pricked. My palms became sweaty. Mentally, I sifted through all the issues I had with people throughout the years, but nothing seemed big enough to warrant this. Logic dictated that Aisling, with her mafia prince husband, and Percy, who was married to one of the richest and cruelest men on planet Earth, were the prime targets. But they were both right. Precisely because their husbands knew their situations, they made security arrangements to make it impossible for them to get hurt.
Is there anything you're not telling us?
Aisling crooned, using her best peacemaker tone.
You can tell us. You know we're on your side. Always.
But I couldn't, because there was nothing to tell.
Everything's fine.
I tried to catch another glimpse behind my back. A trail of a black pea coat disappeared behind a statue.
Oh, fuck that.
Hold this, please.
I gave Sailor Rooney's leash and started after the man. I ran toward the statue, fury burning like acid in my bloodstream. No matter who this man was after, he had a lot to answer for. I bolted behind the statue to find him leaning against it, scrolling through pictures on his phone. Pictures of my back, I realized when I caught a glimpse of my red peacoat on his screen.
Cute number, huh? You should see the front.
I swung my fist backward, about to punch him square in the face. His eyes snapped up. He let out a groan and took off. My fist slung across the air, hitting nothing. I began chasing him. Percy was at my feet.
Belle!
She exclaimed, frantic and breathless.
Come back, you can't do this.
Of course I could do this. It was my duty to do this. I vowed long ago to never let men hurt women just because they could, because they were physically stronger. I picked up my pace while my sister ran behind me. The man was gaining speed.
Meanwhile, Percy had decided to show her athletic side for the first time since she was born and managed to catch up with me, tugging me back to the others by my coat collar. "Leave me alone, Perse," I roared. "Asshole had the guts to take pictures of me. Now I want to know why." I shook her off, pushing through my bad knee and running faster. Percy was persistent. Where did all this new strength come from?
"You can't!"
She jumped in front of me, serving as a barrier between me and the man who was now too far away for me to be able to chase him. This man could have been the same guy who approached me at Madame Mayhem a little over a month ago. Damn it. Percy grabbed my shoulders, her eyes wild in their sockets.
"Listen to me now. I know you're brave, and I know you're a ball buster, but you have to understand it's not just you anymore. There's someone inside you, and you need to think about them. Understand?"
Flashes of my conversation with Dr. Bjorn came back to me. "High risk. Miscarriage danger. We'll have to monitor you closely." I nodded grimly. I knew she was right. What the hell was I thinking, taking off like that? "Fine," I said, surly. "Fine. But I can't just let this shit slide."
"I'm not asking you to," Persephone stressed. "I'll talk to Killian. We'll see what we can do."
But I wasn't going to let a man, not even my brother-in-law, play babysitter to me. I was going to handle my own business. "No, I'll take care of it."
"Not by approaching him on your own," Percy said.
I nodded in agreement, but refrained from using my words. God was in the fine print. Percy gathered me into a hug.
"Now that's my favorite sister."
"You mean your only sister?" I groaned, my cheeks squashed against her insanely swollen, milk-filled bosom. She patted my head.
"That too."
Chapter 12. Devon. 3 days after Emmabelle announced her pregnancy, I got on the phone with Mother for our weekly chat. She sounded breathless and delighted. Not for long, I thought. The mirth train would stop as soon as I told her about my pending fatherhood. While I was delighted at becoming a parent, I was surly about disappointing my mother. Even worse, now that Swevin was pregnant, I was no longer allowed into her messy, in need of a good wash bed. It was like I was being punished for my good behavior.
"Hello, darling Devi. If this is about Harry Tyndall, then I regret to inform you he is still in Cayman Islands, but I got word he'll be returning fairly soon."
"Thank you, Mum, but there's something else we need to talk about." I strode the length of my apartment, aloft in the back bay, wearing nothing but a towel on my waist after a grueling workout.
"There is?" Mum asked. "What's on your mind, sweets?"
I stopped in front of the fireplace in my living room and flicked the electronic switch on. "Are you sitting down?" I gave her the same treatment she gave me when my father died. I could hear her sinking into a leather seat.
"I am now," she sounded strained. "Has something bad happened?"
"Breathe."
"Breathing is overrated. Just tell me, please."
"I'm about to become a father."
What now?"
She sounded genuinely surprised. "A dad," I cemented. "I'm going to have a baby with someone." I heard a sharp thud. She probably dropped her phone, followed by her scrambling to pick up the receiver. The next time she spoke into my ear, her breathing was rough and labored.
"You mean to tell me you're about to father a bastard?"
"Or a bastardess," I said easily. "Probably a bastardess. The mother of the child told me she thinks it'll be a girl, and she's not usually wrong."
But how? Where? When?"
Was the where really necessary? I had no idea if it happened when I drove into Belle while she was sprawled on her office desk, or when I plowed into her in her shower. I made my way into the kitchen of my 4,000-square-foot apartment. I'd never seen something so big and lavish in a building, especially in Back Bay. It was designed with the same meticulous care and old-fashioned nature as my office, loads of carved oak, expensive fabrics, bronze plinths, and a crimson-painted frieze. Most importantly, it was a vast open space with very few walls, exactly as I wished, suffering from raging claustrophobia. Her name is Emmabel. Our liaison was of a casual nature. We were never officially together. She is going to keep the child. When the silence on the other line told me my mother needed substantially more information, I added carefully, Emmabel is in the burlesque business. You could find a picture of her online. She wrote some articles about sexual liberation as a contributing columnist and posed for an erotic calendar. I believe you two would get along swimmingly. I believed no such thing, of course, but disappointing her so close to my father's death didn't feel quite right. Why would I ever meet her? Mother retorted. Because she is going to be the mother of your precious grandchild, I said easily. I do not consider whatever is going to come out of her a grandchild. She was so angry her voice shook. Though I did not expect Mother to throw me a party, I did not expect her to be quite so hostile about the matter either. After all, I had met my alliance with her and Cecilia and helped them financially. My only expectation was for her to accept the way I lived my life. And my way did not include locking non-consenting women in cellars and eating their skin. Having children out of wedlock was common practice in this day and age. I threw the fridge open, starting to fix myself a turkey sandwich. Don't see your grandchild then, your loss. I might change my mind with time, she explained, her tone softening. I just don't want one illegitimate child to ruin your entire bright future. This is the 21st century. We are perfectly capable of keeping this silent and under control. Why would I want to keep it silent and under control? Because you might want to get married. I vowed to never get married, but I didn't think Mum could take any more bad news in one call. In that unlikely event, I'd be up front with my wife. Not every wife would be happy about it. How about we stop beating around the bush? Say what you want to say. Louisa Devi! Her name rang in my ear. A throwback to my father making me kiss her made my jaw clench. What about her? I kicked the fridge door shut and slapped turkey over wheat bread, scantily covered in light mayo and some mustard. Think she is going to accept my arrangement with the burlesque nymph I knocked up? You mean a stripper? My mother gasped, scandalized. This is what you call a stripper these days, don't you? Sure, I yawned sardonically. Call her whatever you want. My insides turned to lava, sizzling with heat. That was a lie. One Swevin wasn't going to appreciate. So it was a good thing Mum didn't want to see her grandchild, because if she ever tried to look down on Belle in front of her face, God help her, she would have no face to look down from anymore. Yes, well, there are ways to work around anything, Devi. Rakes were not extinguished from the world with modern civilization. We high society women just learned new tricks to keep your discretions discreet. I cannot marry Louisa. I smacked a slice of cheese on my sandwich with ferocity that implied it was personally responsible for my current distress. Where is this coming from? You've never pushed me on the matter. Only Papa ever did, and he paid for it by losing his only son. Not only can I not marry Louisa, I can't even be seen with her again. The media in Britain would have a field day if they found out I'm about to father a child out of wedlock with a ditzy American while mooning after a duke's daughter. The Daily Londoner had an entire team of journalists dedicated to following every royal's move. There was no way this would be kept a secret. It's not the end of this discussion, my mother informed me, businesslike. When is this thing due? I believe she is about 6 or 7 weeks along, so this thing will not be here for a while. That's very early to know you are pregnant, almost like she planned the whole thing, my mother mused. I did not tell her that Emmabel and I had both agreed to have this child. Though I loved my mother, it was none of her business. Not everyone is as cunning as the Whitehalls, Mother. I hung up the phone. Taking a bite of my sandwich, I chewed without tasting it. Whatever my mother's next move was, I knew I would meet it head on.
Are you going to murder me?
My fencing partner Bruno asked the next day while I nearly pierced his brain through his mask. A corps à corps, bodily contact between two fences, was illegal in fencing. It was the third time I did it.
What's bothering you?
Bruno asked through his stainless steel mask. Not gracing his question with an answer, I went on the attack again, thinking about my conversation with my mother, about the radio silence coming from Bell. Fencing was physical chess. It required a level of intellectuality, not just quick limbs and fast instincts. That's why it was my favorite sport. I lunged forward, while Bruno became more guarded, backing away from the strip.
Devon!
He stumbled out of the mat, ripping the mask from his head. His face was sweaty, his eyes wide.
Devon, stop!
It was only after he begged me to stop that I realized I had almost killed him. That he was small and scared, tucked into a corner of the room, his saber sword down, his body shaking.
You're going through something, man. You need to get your shit together.
With that, he stormed off. I peeled my mask off, frowning. My shite was never together, you fool. From there, I went to Sam's Club, not to be confused with the retail warehouse chain store. My mate, Sam Brennan's establishment, Badlands, was home to the best gambling tables, whiskey, and cocaine. The club itself wasn't underground, but instead open to the general public. The poker rooms in the back, however, were carefully curated. I frequented those rooms as much as I could, at least three times a week, sometimes more. Tucked into one of the snug gambling rooms, Sam, Hunter, Killian, and I played a game of cards around a table covered with green felt. A cloud of cigar smoke hovered over our heads. An assortment of half-empty glasses of brandy and whiskey bracketed our elbows.
Congrats on knocking up the ultimate femme fatale.
Hunter flashed me his Colgate smile behind his hand of cards. We were playing rummy, which did nothing to help my already growing suspicion I was, indeed, an old fart in Swevin's eyes. A sardonic smirk found my lips.
It was no trouble at all.
Trouble? No.
Weird? Yes. I didn't think y'all were still bumping uglies,
Hunter mused. I had no interest whatsoever in discussing Emmabel Penrose, not with Killian and Hunter, two people whom I still considered clients, and Sam Brennan, whom, despite his persistent pleas, I did not agree to take as a client.
Was it accidental?
Killian probed, sucking on his cigar and sending me a chillingly hostile gaze. Not because something happened. That was simply his usual expression. The only time he looked remotely content was when he was with his wife and children. Any other time, you could mistake him for a serial killer in the mood to practice his favorite hobby.
That's none of your business, I said cheerfully, sliding a new card off the pile in the middle of the table. I'm sure it was an accident. No one is dumb enough to willingly tie their future to that she-wolf.
Sam took a pull of his Guinness, scanning the room with boredom.
Last I checked, your wife married a man with enough blood on his hands to fill the Mystic River. What does it say about her IQ?
I quirked an eyebrow.
It means her IQ is divine like the rest of her. Yours, however, is questionable at best. Knocking my wife to my face is a great way to find yourself 6 feet under.
Control those feelings, son. They could be a tremendous liability. I patted his hand patronizingly, my tone as blank as my expression. He kept forgetting I wasn't one of his fanboys. All eyes turned to me curiously.
Do you have a crush on that wild child?
Hunter gave me a pitiful look.
Damn, Dev, you never defend anyone unless there's a 100K retainer involved.
Killian smirked.
He had a good run. A short one, too, if he continues talking to me like that.
Sam chewed on his electric cigarette dispassionately.
This, despite what an outsider might think, was an agreeable evening in our universe. I don't know if I could do it, though, man.
Hunter shook his head. The good-looking bastard was cleaner than the Pope's STD results. He hadn't had a stiff drink in years, not since he got together with his wife. I did her quite happily and find it hard to believe any red-blooded man wouldn't. I studied my cards, drumming my fingers over the table. Suddenly, the prospect of spending the entire night here wasn't so appealing. I wanted to pick up the phone and call Belle, listen to her laugh, to her sharp, witty whips. I knew it wasn't an option. Not being able to be next to the woman who carries your child seems insane. There are so many things you're not going to experience. The kicks, the little flips the baby does when they change positions, seeing them for the first time in an ultrasound. I swear to God, the first time I saw Rooney on that black and white screen, I almost pissed my pants. She gave me the finger and had her legs wide open. Hunter let out a proud laugh, like he'd just announced his daughter was nominated for the Nobel Prize. The kicking is the good part, Sam agreed gruffly, drawing another card from the center of the table. Aisling used to wait up for me after work with a tall glass of cold water and drink it so I could feel Ambrose kick. Since when did you all turn into a bunch of old maids? I rolled up my sleeves. It was becoming increasingly hot in here, or maybe they were just getting on my nerves. I wasn't at all sure that being spared the pregnancy was a good thing, but I didn't have a choice. I looked over to Killian, who stayed silent the entire time. Out of all the men at the table, he was the closest to me in character, sans the fact that I actually possessed some kind of heart and a wonky, though still working, moral compass. It's all rubbish, isn't it? I huffed at him. Pregnant women are hormonal, demanding, and out of their bloody minds. My father sent my mother to live with her parents each time she got pregnant, just so he wouldn't have to deal with her. All eyes darted to me. I realized I'd finally said something personal about my family, after years, decades of keeping mum about them. Killian was the first one to recover. It's true. A pregnant woman can be all of those things. He shrugged. And she is also the person who is carrying the most important human in the world to you. The truth is, you fall in love with a woman twice. Once so that you want her to give you a child, and a second time when she does and you realize you cannot live without her. Later that night, I stumbled my way out of Badlands and found myself walking toward Madame Mayhem. The two establishments weren't too far apart, and I could use the fresh winter air. I gave it some thought during the card game and realized I wanted to take an active role in Emma Bell's pregnancy. Didn't Swevin say hers was a high-risk pregnancy? It was important I stayed in the loop in case she needed anything. Plus, I wanted all the things my mates had. Flipping babies, unborn children giving them the finger during ultrasounds, tall glasses of cold water. Granted, I forgot the context in which this had been mentioned. When I got to Madame Mayhem, I remembered how aptly named it was. Chaos teemed between the blood-red walls. There were three people behind the bar. One of them was Emma Bell, her hair sticking to her temples as she ran from one point to the other. The place was overflowing with people. There was no bloody way they adhered to the maximum capacity it could host. Customers were piling on top of each other trying to get to the bar. The supply and demand ratio was askew. Things were getting out of hand. The daft cow had more than enough to take an early leave and monitor her pregnancy, but she wasn't a fan of yielding control. Well, that made two of us. On stage, the burlesque dancers were getting all their moves wrong, too distracted by the commotion. The band played out of tune. I hopped behind the bar without thinking much of it, took off my tweed jacket, rolled up my sleeves, and began serving people. Where's the beer fridge? I hollered over the music, using my arse to push the mother of my unborn baby aside. And the clean glasses! What are you doing here? Swevin yelled back, dripping sweat. It was worth noting she didn't look half pleased to be rescued by me. Saving you from collapsing. I took a few orders at once and began popping beer bottles open and doing my best following cocktail recipes from what I remembered in my head. I don't need... She started with her usual I'm an independent woman, hear me roar spiel. I turned toward her abruptly, placing a finger over her lips. Help, I know. I don't doubt that for one second or I wouldn't have put a baby inside you. I find neediness quite off-putting, to be honest.
but you are also the mother of my future child, and I'm not going to see you work yourself to death. Understood? She glared. Am I understood? Yes, she glowered, taken aback. For the next hour and a half, I served fruity cocktails refilled wasabi peas bowls, overcharged people for cans of organic soda, and even got tipped an amount akin to what I make the first 15 seconds of a consultation meeting. Afterward, when things calmed down, I grabbed Belle by the arm and dragged her into her office. When she was safely inside, I closed the door, walked over to a mini-fridge, took out two bottles of water and unscrewed one, handing it to her. I hated her office. It was small and confined enough to make my head swim, bringing back bad memories. I'm not thirsty, she sassed. Drink this water, I said through gritted teeth, or I will tell your sister how little you're doing to protect this pregnancy. You'll rat me out? Her eyes narrowed. In a heartbeat, darling. Hesitantly, she began sipping the water. Why are you here, Devon? She leaned against her desk, which, incredibly, was even messier than I remembered. Did she need an intervention? Was this a treatable condition? I had an interesting conversation with the lads tonight, after which I came to the decision that I want to be present during your pregnancy, not just after the delivery. The first trimester is the most crucial one, yes? I can't have you running around doing five people's jobs. I want to help take care of you, and the first thing I intend to do is hire two or three more bartenders. You're awfully short on staff. Don't you think I know that? She asked, chugging down the rest of her water and wiping her brow. I was surprised she didn't fight me on that point. Then again, she looked particularly greenish and not at all her usual nymph self. The problem is I have insane standards and no one Ross and I have interviewed so far seems good enough. I have to make sure I hire people who would be good with my dancers and with the other bartenders. You can't work yourself to the bone. Can't I? Her head lolled from side to side, like it wasn't entirely connected to her neck. I was becoming increasingly worried this woman was going to kill herself just to prove a point. I've done a good job so far, haven't I? At what price? I stepped in her direction, using every ounce of my self-control not to touch her. It seemed unnatural not to put my hands on her when we were together, but it was something I had to get used to. I needed to respect our agreement. And why would you want to anyway? Hasn't this experience taught you anything? There's more to life than work. A mocking laugh rolled out of her. Easy for you to say, you're a damn royal, brah. You were born into money. There was no point telling her that I hadn't had access to a penny of my family's fortune since the age of 21, or that brah was not, in fact, a word, but rather a spit in the face to the English language. You're not fooling me or yourself, Swevin. We all make decisions emotionally, then tag rational reasoning to them. Whatever you're selling, I'm not buying. You must concentrate on what's important. Let me deal with finding you new employees. I will speak to this Ross bloke. I already feel quite close to him, seeing as I sniffed his bollocks a few weeks ago. She let out a faint laugh, slumping into herself like a collapsed blanket fort, looking tired and young. Too young, all of a sudden. All right. I tilted my chin down. She nodded. Whatever. But that doesn't mean you get to act like you're running this show. It's a one-off, okay? A one-off, I agreed, when in my heart I knew it was going to be one of many. And that I was not done screwing her either.
Chapter 13 Belle. The next morning, I ran to the toilet and threw up whatever little was in my stomach. I'd been having issues with morning sickness since the beginning of the week. The problem was that I could only keep down three things without getting up close and intimate with the toilet bowl: rice cakes, ginger candy, and Diet Coke. Now, I was no nutritionist, but I was pretty sure those three things did not make for a balanced diet rich in vitamins and minerals for me or my baby. They did, however,
make for a lovely dieting plan that would result in my losing the extra 5 pounds I'd been struggling with for 3 years. I plastered my forehead to the toilet seat, pathetically enjoying its coolness against my burning brow. I was sweaty and exhausted. My hair was stuck to my neck and hung in wet strands. I blinked, white spots dancing across my vision as I tried to focus on the lime green floor in my bathroom. Please, baby Whitehall, let me eat a piece of toast with some cheese today. You need the protein and I need the variety. I get that morning sickness is nature's way to tell women to stay the fuck away from all the bad stuff, but I promise I'm not getting near coffee, alcohol, raw meat, or sashimi for the next 9 months. Hell, I'll throw in pickles and hard candy if you give me a break. Baby Whitehall, which, according to a chart I found on the internet, was currently the size of a kidney bean and didn't find my plea compelling. Sure enough, another bout of puking began. With my last strength, I picked up the phone and texted Devin. Belle, I know you said you want to be more involved. I'm thinking of booking an appointment with my OBGYN. Devin, ? Belle, I can't be farther than 2 feet from the bathroom at all times. Devin, ? 1 or 2? Belle, 3. Belle, puking? Devin, I'll have Joanne book an appointment and send a cab for you. Ah, his trusted secretary. Because when he said he wanted to get involved, what he really meant was he wanted to control me until I produced him a healthy, chubby baby. Belle, it's fine. I can do it myself. Devin, keep me posted. Belle, screw you. But I didn't actually send that last message. It reeked of emotions, and I didn't do those. Simmering in a pool of self-pity, I dragged my feet across my shoebox apartment, glancing dejectedly at the place and wondering where in the world I was going to fit an entire baby. The baby itself wouldn't take too much space, but her stuff would need a room. And babies this day and age had all sorts of stuff. My sister and all my friends had kids. And their toys and furniture needed acres of land. Cribs, changing tables, dressers, high chairs, bassinets, toys. The list was never ending, and I was currently struggling to find a place for my coffee cups. Too exhausted to figure out the accommodations, I spent the first half of the day binge-watching true crime documentaries on Netflix. Because nothing screams a nurturing mother-to-be like following the chronicles of a serial killer. A knock on the door jolted me. I groaned, flinging my feet off the couch. I threw my door open, only realizing I should have asked who it was when the memory of my trip to the Boston Common and my stalker resurfaced. Well, crap in a basket. I'd been meaning to call Sam Brennan and ask him what he charges these days for a bodyguard to protect a bitch. But my pregnancy brain fog took over my life. Besides, things had been calm the last few days. Swevin? A pimply guy in an upscale chain store uniform smiled at me, holding approximately a gazillion brown bags. Phew, not a serial killer. I seem to be answering to that nickname recently. Yeah. I looked left and right to make sure he was alone and didn't happen to have a serial killer with him. I have a delivery for you. Clean juices, exotic fruit baskets, and ready-made meals for a week by Organic You. Where should I put this? I motioned with my head toward the kitchen, leading the way. My baby daddy was a prick, but at least he was a considerate one. I got to work looking like I'd been dragged there by an angry beaver. Bloodshot eyes. Knotty hair haphazardly gathered in a bun, and a dress I lovingly referred to as the period dress. For a reason. Ambling into the club, I noticed Ross was standing with 3 people I did not recognize. My heart immediately jerked in my chest. I wasn't a fan of strangers in general, but especially after the incidents with the strange man at my club and the other man who chased me in the common.
Oh, good. Sleeping Beauty's here.
Ross turned to beam at me, handing me my coffee. I placed it on the bar, the mere scent of it making me want to throw up every slice of pizza I'd ever consumed in my lifetime. I'm only 3 minutes late. I dropped my clutch on the counter and not so gracefully plopped into a seat. No offense, but, who the hell are these people? Your new employees, hired by a third party. Charming, right? That third party, I guessed, was Devin Whitehall, the man who managed to be a helicopter parent before the baby was actually born. The first employee was Morgan, a vertically challenged spitfire with pixie hair, a nose ring, and enough attitude to light up Vegas. She introduced herself as a certified mixologist with 5 years' experience at Troy and Sparrow, Brennan's Michelin-starred restaurant, and explained to me assertively that she was specifically hired to work double shifts. The second was Alice, a 40-something-year-old with 20 years of experience running a bar in New York. Alice's rough hands implied she was well-versed in throwing creepers and troublemakers out of bars if need be. The third employee was a man named Simon Diamond. Stage name, anyone? Who was approximately the size of a Ram truck. Simon eyed me the entire time like I was a prisoner he needed to keep from running away. When I asked about his work background, he offered a half-baked explanation.
Was a bouncer for a decade.
Oh, we don't need any more bouncers. I smiled politely, already planning to have Ross and Morgan teach him how to make cocktails. Simon returned a smile, only it made my bones snap in fear.
I'm not here to be a bouncer.
What are you here for? I took a sip of my coffee, then immediately dribbled it back into the cup. Bad idea. Bad, bad idea. Baby Whitehall wasn't impressed with my unkept promise not to touch caffeine.
This and that. Everything, really.
Jack of all trades, huh? Well, that won't be necessary.
I've already been paid for the next 9 months, ma'am. You won't be able to get rid of me.
I didn't know what I found more disconcerting, the fact that he forced his presence on me or the fact that he called me ma'am. I also had no idea how Devin convinced these people to work for me. They were obviously overqualified. I was pretty sure he paid through the nose to compensate for the fact they were going to serve a lot of gin and tonics to middle-aged men coming to get an eyeful of the burlesque dancers.
Bell, honey, a little more appreciation and a little less bitchiness would be great.
Ross materialized from the back office and strolled toward the bar, looking grim and a little put off. I didn't even notice he was gone.
Devin brought me up to speed about the fact you're eating for two.
He put a hand on my shoulder and peered down at me.
Why on earth didn't you tell me? I thought I was one of your best friends.
You are. I licked my lips, not used to being called out, but appreciating it anyway because Ross had every right to be hurt. I'm sorry, Ross. It's just because... general health stuff. This is a high-risk pregnancy, so I didn't want to announce it too early.
Oh.
I could feel him defrosting, but he still wasn't happy that I'd kept it from him. Devin needs to be gagged. I'm surprised he didn't commission a Times Square banner. I looked around me dispassionately. Speaking of banners and billboards, my days posing naked were over. Baby Whitehall was going to have enough material for her future therapist without my nudity adding to the mix.
Give him time. He might do that too.
I flipped Ross the finger. He curled my middle finger back into my fist, but there was no anger in his voice.
I'll let this one slide, because it seems like you've experienced many changes in the past few weeks.
I gnawed at my lower lip, deciding to drop the ball-busting charade for a second. I mean, this was Ross. My Ross. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, you've met him? I didn't put a question mark at the end of the sentence. My insides liquefied.
I have.
Ross nodded cryptically while Morgan, Alice, and Simon pretended to look around the place and talk to each other. And what did you think?
I think...
he flipped my hair, playing with it lovingly.
He is hotter than the devil's dick. Talks like a Netflix duke and is crazy about you. I approve of the arrangement. Thanks for giving me the blessing I didn't ask for. You're welcome. And while we're on the topic, I know you're going to manage to screw it up somehow because you're allergic to relationships, but please, Belly Bell, please, can we keep him for just a little longer? He clapped his hands together and gave me puppy eyes, like a child who came across a stray cat he wanted to adopt. No. I produced a small mirror from my clutch and checked my red lipstick, using my pinky to wipe the lines. His job is done. You should tell him that. He threatened that if I let you work the bar tonight, he'd personally kick my ass. So I'm going to go ahead and send you to work in the office until no later than 6 o'clock, after which you'll go back home. 6 o'clock? I roared. It's 4 o'clock right now. 4:20. Don't forget, you were late. Ross grabbed the small mirror, checking his own reflection. He raised his eyebrows to check his Botox situation. In my opinion, he had at least 3 more months in him before he needed to visit his dermatologist. You can't kick me out of my own workplace. I snatched the mirror and shoved it into my clutch. Want a bet? Mr. Whitehall asked me to refer to Clause 12.5 of your contract. By the way, so hot that you have one, in which, if you endanger your unborn child, he may have grounds to sue you. Holy crappers. Why couldn't I get knocked up by the friendly frontrunner? He wouldn't give two shits if I drank myself to death under a bridge. There was no point arguing with Ross or Devin. Not because I was one to pass up a chance to quarrel, but because I could actually use a few hours of sleep. I was exhausted. As much as I hated to admit it, Devin was right. I needed rest. Begrudgingly, I retreated to my office. Powering up my MacBook, I noticed a pile of envelopes sitting on the edge of my desk. I remembered what Devin had said about opening them to ensure they weren't only just hate mail. Maybe I won the lottery? Maybe there's some fan mail in there, telling me how awesome I was for celebrating the extravagant, fun, and sexually liberal wonders of burlesque? I jerked the stack my way and began sifting through them. A bunch of bills I'd already paid. 2 angry letters about my substantial role in corrupting the youth of Boston. And 1 thank you letter from a woman who came to see a show a few months ago and was inspired to quit her job as a marine biologist and join the burlesque cast of A Midsummer Night's Dream. I picked up another letter, this one printed. 2 Emma Bell Penrose. I tore it open. The letter was short and contained a return address for a P.O. box in Maryland. Emma Bell, are you worried for your life yet? You should be. If you only paid more attention to what was going on around you, you'd have noticed that I've been watching you for a long time now, planning my revenge. I know where you live, where you work, and who you hang out with. That's the part where you get scared. You'd be right to. I'm not going to rest until you're dead. No one can help you. Not your best friend's husband, Sam Brennan. Not your idiotic sister, Persephone, or her billionaire husband. Not even that fancy man you've been hanging out with recently. Once I made up my mind, your destiny was sealed. You can take this letter to the police. In fact, I encourage you to. It'll just give you more shit to worry about and disrupt your already messed up life. I'm going to kill you for what you did to me. And I'm not even going to be sorry about it. Never yours. The person you took everything from. My stomach twisted, clenching around the stupid clean juice I drank for breakfast. So that man in the Boston Common was there for me. Was he the same person who thought I'd wronged him, or was he there just to spy? Either way, someone was after me. After my life. An invisible enemy. A noose formed around my neck. Who could it be? Taking inventory, I had to admit I was far from being the nicest person on planet Earth, but I by no means had arch enemies. I'd hurt no one. No one that I could think of, certainly not to a point of such rage. There was one incident,
long ago. But the only person affected was no longer alive. Good thing I had a gun, which I was going to take with me everywhere from now on just in case. Krav Maga skills and the badass bitch attitude with which to strangle this person with my own hands if they came anywhere near me. Plus, I couldn't exactly advertise what was happening to me. Telling Devin and my closest friends about this letter would only create more chaos. As it was, my baby daddy was trying to take control of my life, and I didn't want to give him more leeway than he already had to make decisions on my behalf. No, this was another challenge I would have to meet head on. There was someone else I needed to take care of, and I was going to kill for her if need be. My baby. Chapter 14. Belle. The OBGYN checkup came just in time. I was eager to hear about baby Whitehall's life inside my hostile womb, and also to get approximately 5,000 prescription drugs for my morning sickness, which now had me dropping 6 pounds. Involuntarily, of course. Joanne, Devin's secretary, called me in the morning to let me know she'd sent a cab for me. She sounded like the sweetest person on planet Earth, Jennifer Aniston included. Now, I'm not saying I know what it's about, but I sure hope our friend Lord Whitehall is treating you well, she clucked on the other line. Ma'am, he is treating me too well. There's no such thing, she bellowed. I could practically hear her contemplating her next words before she said, Again, I have no idea what I'm booking this for, but I do hope this is going to stick. He's a fantastic man, strong, confident, sturdy, razor sharp. He deserves a good woman. He does, I thought bitterly. Too bad I'm incapable of being that for him. When I slid into the cab an hour later, clad in oversized sunglasses and a faux fur coat, I was surprised to see Devin sitting on the other end of the passenger seat, dressed in a dashing suit and a peacoat, typing emails on his phone. Swithin. He pocketed the phone as he turned to me, drawling in his signature Hugh Grant accent. Fuck me. Asshole, I volleyed back, still surly about the fact he'd shoved himself into my business, figuratively and literally. You're here. Yay me. Should have known you'd try and take control of this situation, too. Enjoying your new employees. He ignored my barb. All of them, actually. Why wasn't he backing away? Why wasn't he giving up on me just like every other man I exhausted into submission? Ask me in a week. I'll set a reminder. I couldn't tell if he was sarcastic or not. I'm going to pay you back for them, you know. I rested my head against the cool seat and closed my eyes to ease the sickness.
You look terrible, darling.
Thanks, boo. Wasn't I just a bundle of joy?
By that, I mean you look exhausted.
How can I help? You can get out of my hair.
Sorry, it smells too good.
I let out a tired smile. I'm not going to turn you off with this attitude, am I? He shrugged, throwing me a lopsided grin that made my heart slow almost to a complete stop.
Exquisite things often have thorns. It's to keep away unwanted attention.
You really think you're going to screw me again, huh? I blinked.
Positive,
he confirmed. When we arrived at Dr. Bjorn's office, my OBGYN was under the bizarre impression Devin was an ex-boyfriend of mine and that we rekindled our romance. No reason for him to think that, of course. He just did.
There's nothing I like to see more than old flames spark anew due to baby-making.
He ushered both of us to a checkup room, clapping his hands excitedly. The only blaze analogy I'd use for this man would be my setting him on fire, I assured the happy doctor. Devin chuckled darkly, rubbing my back in comforting circles. We made our way through the hallway littered with pictures of sleeping babies in baskets. When you thought about it, babies and kittens had a lot in common in terms of appropriation.
As you can tell, her hormones are already all over the place.
Devon was being deliberately chauvinistic to grind my gears. I wasn't going to let him know he was ruffling my feathers, though. "Don't expect wedding bells, Dr. Bjorn," I said. I needed to ensure that Devon knew I was not up for the taking. I was already straddling the edge of an anxiety attack just from hanging out with him. Some girls didn't want to be touched after a traumatic experience. But me? My body was very receptive to male attention. It was my brain, heart, and soul that rejected the idea of them completely. We entered a small room with wooden cabinets, an examination table, and more charts about babies and STDs.
"Duly noted, Ms. Penrose. So, Mr. Whitehall, would you like to join us for the vaginal ultrasound exam?"
My OBGYN asked Devon, not me. These two were really hitting it off. Also, shouldn't I be the one to decide such a thing? "He wouldn't," I said, at the same time Devon exclaimed,
"I'd be delighted to."
Dr. Bjorn looked between us.
My apologies. Usually when a man arrives with his partner for an ultrasound, I'd draw a certain conclusion. I'm sorry if I overstepped. I'll leave you to decide and come back in a few minutes. Please ensure that you're in your robe and undressed from the waist down on the examination table, Ms. Penrose."
Devon and I engaged in a stare-off for a few seconds before he drawled,
"And your problem is?"
"It's a vaginal exam."
"So, I've seen yours before from all angles. Fucked it, licked it, fingered it, and played with it."
"This is a pivotal moment in my life, you caveman," I barked.
"Intimate for both of us. It's my child in there."
He pointed at my stomach. "And my vagina," I reminded him.
"My God, you are childish."
Finally, he was over my behavior, but it didn't feel half as satisfying as I thought it would. "Well, I am over a decade younger than you."
"Look," he sighed, shaking his head like I was an unruly child. "I promise not to look anywhere sensitive. I just want to see the baby. My baby."
"There's nothing to see," I threw my hands in the air. "At this point, it's as big as a bean."
"Our bean," he corrected.
He had a point, and I hated that he had a point. I also hated that I couldn't say no to him. Not about the employees, or joining me at the doctor's, or anything else. Because the truth was, doing shit with someone else around didn't feel so bad after all. "Fine. But if you peek at my muffin, I swear to God I'm going to destroy your baked goods." He frowned at me.
"You need to work on your analogies."
"I meant I'd punch your junk."
"Subtle."
The vaginal ultrasound went as well as a vaginal ultrasound could go. Devon and I saw the little dot in my uterus, static and proud. Both of us stared at it with awe and amazement.
"The little bean is looking good. Make sure you are rested and keep your stress levels low."
That was Dr. Bjorn speaking. To Devon, naturally.
"Roger that, Doc." "All right, hop off and meet me in my office."
This was when I glared at Devon. "Do you mind?" I caught him staring at me like I'd just performed a magic trick he hadn't seen before. Big, azure eyes swimming with emotion and pride. And it killed me. It killed me that I couldn't wrap my arms around him and kiss him and tell him that I felt the same. All of it. The shock, the excitement, the awe. Instead, I raised my eyebrows as if to say, "Well?"
"Right, of course."
Devon stood up, looking around like he had another reason to stay.
"I'll just, well, yes. Yes, see you at the doctor's office when you're done dressing."
Dr. Bjorn prescribed me with some pills to ease the morning sickness and told us we were doing a good job. I wasn't sure Devon would have agreed with the assessment had he known about the Glock nestled in my clutch and that I was ready to get into a physical fight with a stalker at any given moment. We swung out of the office, and I called the elevator while Devon took the stairs. I didn't try to convince him to go down the elevator with me. I knew damn well I didn't like it when people pushed me out of my comfort zone or minimalized my triggers, so I tried to accommodate his preferences. We met again at the ground floor and stood in front of each other on the street, bracketed by skyscrapers and pedestrians. Suddenly, I had a Swevin of my own, a vision of us holding hands, smiling at each other, enjoying this moment like an ordinary couple. Devin cleared his throat and looked away.
I better head to work.
Right, I rearranged my ponytail. Me too. I have employees to train.
That must be a pain,
he offered politely. Necessary evil, I concluded. Stop me. Tell me not to go. Let's stay a little longer.
Whoa. I had no idea where those thoughts came from.
Well, catch you later. I took a step back and started for the street. I began walking in the opposite direction when his voice pierced the air.
Perhaps.
I froze in my spot, my soul in my throat.
Yes? You'd like some brunch. You heard what the doctor said. You need to keep your energy levels up. I can pick up your pills while you wait for our order. There's a cafe.